struggling to get through these psukim. We are in Perek Beis Pasuk Chaf. We are in the middle of Mefarshim on page 238. Again, that's page 238, Sefer Yoel, Perek Beis Pasuk Chaf. We'll read the pasuk very quickly again. Yes, Hatzifayni, all the various Perushim, Melech Ashur, the Rome, or maybe it's both Rome and Nebuchadnezzar, those who destroyed the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni, the Yetzahara, Archik Me'aleichem, I will distance from upon you, Vidachtiv, I will banish them, I will push them, El Eretz Tzia Ushimama, Espanov El Yom HaKadmoni, Usayfai El Yom HaAchrayin, the front end will be pushed into the Yam HaMelach, and the end and the back end will be pushed into the Yam HaGadol, the Mediterranean. V'olo v'ashoyit stench, v'sal tzach hanosoy, two expressions which mean for our purposes the same exact thing. The stench of this dead creature will go all the way up to Shemayim, will ascend, it'll enter into our nostrils. This will be disgusting. Ki higdil asoyis, the reason why this creature deserves punishment is because they have acted in a magnificent way, which we simply translate as they have done more than what they were permitted to do. Okay, we're not going to go over all the ideas. Let's just go further from where we're up to. We're in the middle of the Malbim on page 239. Let us look at the Olav Voshoi, how he describes this idea of the stench of the Yetzirah. Okay, page 54 miles apart.
Working on a tunnel
for the 200 feet. Wait, so what's higher? Which one is higher? The Mediterranean or the Yam HaMelach? The Dead Sea is
much lower.
200 feet lower than the Yam HaGadol. And what are they trying to do? A tunnel?
Generates electricity.
They want it to go downward, but where's all the water going to go? And from there, where is it going to go?
Runs out into the
So it's not going to flood the land? It's not going to make a flood if it goes?
No, it's going to run out.
It's going to run out.
And it will. Yamamelech anyway is too salty.
So they want to add more water. It's a great idea. Yeah. Fantastic. It's a fantastic idea. It sounds like a brilliant idea. So what's taking so long? So what's so little taking? 50 miles is not the end of the world in this in today's day and age. Today's day and age. So why talk until they do this? Great idea. It sounds like a brilliant idea. Wow. Leave it to the Israelis, huh? Leave it to the Jews. Not the Israelis, the Jews. That's much shorter. Okay, but this sounds like
and
a great idea.
They're doing this because now is a technology to make them purify the water, so they would give the Jordan water.
It's fantastic, fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, let's see. Page 239 in the Malam, the Olav Roshoi, Kiderech Arbe, the stench will rise. What does this mean? Kiderech Arbe? It's the nature of locusts. Ve'esh she'yistalek l'haniach acharav bosha v'tzachana. This is natural. I guess we're not, Baruch Hashem in America, we're not all that familiar, at least in New York City, with locusts. But they do have, in America, there is locust down out in the West. There is such a thing. Every once in a while, you do hear in the news, right? You do.
In Texas a few years ago, they had a big problem.
Locust. Okay, so it's not so, it does exist, and those who are familiar will tell us that it produces stench. When the locusts leave, l'hanich acharav bosha v'tzachana, tzachana al yidei hazera, she'yaniach. So here the Malbim is telling us there's not poetic repetition like the Mitzudos David, but the words here are precise. There is there is precision in the in the different types of stench. The word sachana is al yidei hazera sheyaniach uvasha al yidei sheyemusu rabim mimenu. The tzachana is the zera. It leaves over seed. I guess, to reproduce. Okay, that's that stench, the word vosha, some of the tzachana, the word tzachana, it is specifically referring to the zera. Uvosha is the term that specifically refers to the dead locust. Uvosha alidei sheyomusu rabim imenu, like it says, vativa sharetz in parshas Vo'era, parshas Vo'era, I believe. In Vo'era. The Yishave Aide Zedever. Now here's what it says of this very frightening. And when is going to be after the Arbe dies and leaves over stench, it produces bacteria. And that causes Dever. Vichoiloim Aide Ipusho Avir. The ear becomes polluted. Maftiach, so therefore, Maftiach kital v'tistalek habosha v'hatzachanot. Ki higdil asois, ritzon leimar, shekvor osa shvichusoi b'shleimus v'osa chumim gadol, v'gam, so before we go further, so we're saying over here something really very, very powerful, the Malbim, and this is, you see over here the Malbim, the creativity, the mind of the Malbim always sees things from a different perspective. And he says over here that this that we read until now, the Olo Voshay, the Salt Sachanosai, we have always translated this so far for the last 2 days as referring to part of the curse, part of the punishment, that not only will the locusts consume the produce of the earth and bring famine to the people, it will also leave over an unpleasant odor in the world, in Eretz Yisrael, which will take years. Whatever it will be until the stench will leave the land. You know, if we would be taken back into the beginning of the 20th century, we would run away from New York City faster than the fastest locomotive. Why? We would not be able to tolerate, living here in the 21st century, we would not be able to tolerate the stench of New York City. What am I referring to? Horse waste. That's what they read. That's what it says in all the books. The New York, full. No, not just mud. The streets were full of. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And the whole New York City stunk. It stunk, and we were such mifunakim today in the 21st century. We wouldn't be able to survive a day in the New York City of the beginning of the 20th century. And it's amazing, like, when they talk about halacha, you know, wearing tefillin, you're not allowed to daven.
That's the reason for sidewalks, because they had to cover up all the garbage.
In the streets.
Yeah.
In the streets. The horses freely laid waste, and it's really, and I know halachically, when you go, you can't wear tefillin, you can't daven in a place where there's an odor from these things.
It's probably more horses than people in the
street. What?
Where you walk.
I read an article when the automobile came into when they made the automobile. They said, now we solve the problem in New York City about the accident with the pedestrians. The horses will not kill people because the horses were getting wild. So little they know what's happening now.
With cars. So the cars will kill people.
London has a river under the city. They just paved over it.
Over the river?
Yeah, London has a city under the city, the whole city.
Okay, so we until now have understood the pasuk to be teaching us that there's a curse built upon a curse. There's a curse that the locusts have devoured the produce of the earth and there's nothing what to eat, there's starvation in the land. And on top of that, after the locusts leave the land, it leaves over a stench, which takes time, it takes years until the stench goes away. A curse upon a curse. The Malbim says that's not the pshat, in his understanding, it's a bracha. That when Hashem says, the curse is over, I'm now going to allow the land to produce grain, to provide food for the people, I will remove the locusts, and not only will I remove the locust, I will remove the stench. The Ola Voshoi, the Salt Sachanosai, the stench will be removed immediately l'mala miderech hateva from society, so you should not have to suffer what naturally comes with the removal of the locus. So it's a bracha.
The Torah means it will help. It will be a good thing.
Benefit?
Because in the 1800s, the people gathered guano.
Yeah.
Which was the
waste.
The waste of birds. The islands in the Pacific. They would get it for protection. They would use it for
medicine.
They would send ships and they would dig out all
So he's saying something very powerful. You want to go say is that the klala itself will turn into a bracha. Now when there's a need for the earth to produce seed, to produce grain, the locust, which was the object which destroyed, they themselves will now be instrumental in bringing produce to the earth. That's an amazing concept. That within the klala can now, the mahapecha klala, the klala itself turns into a bracha. It's a very, very beautiful idea. The vinegar also should light.
Right.
So here the klola itself, the stench is now going to be the fertilizer in order to enhance, to bring forth
well,
produce.
The malbim in Vayera and Bo gets into a whole how cause and effect, how one makkah leads into the other on a natural basis, but also pointing out what was l'mala miderech hateva, obviously not to make it sound like
right.
It, but he gives a whole description of a few pages like that.
It's interesting over here that he's telling us after Arbe comes Dever, but in the Makos it wasn't like that. In the Makos, the Dever was before Arbe was the third to last.
He finishes off even with Makos Bechoros. Why was Al Yetze Yishmi Pesach Beiso at Boker? Because of with the death of all the
bacteria.
The marauding, the mob scene of the Egyptians running through the seats in the streets. If the Jews would be out of doors, they would have been trampled to death and killed if they were in the streets. Because at this point, the goodwill had run out from Mitzrayim towards the Jews. Now they were just running for their lives, and the Jews would have been slaughtered in the streets had they gone out. He makes a point of saying that.
The Barbanel.
No, the Malvum.
The Malvum, okay. Over there in Parsha.
Yeah, in Parsha's bow, that's what he says.
Okay, very interesting, very interesting. Okay, let's finish up over here. The last line to be the Chazal Darshu. Okay, three lines from the bottom. Chazal Darshu, Aliyat Zahara. Okay, now the Malam finally goes back to Rashi, to the Gemara. We'll read the Gemara for a few moments. It's not the Nachash, it's the Chait. The Hayat Zahara Hoya Hasiba, El Bias Ha'arbe. The Yetzer was the cause of the Bias Arbe. The Aide Shi Yisrachek at Sefaini Shu Yetzer Zahara at Sofim Beleva Ames Lachatoi Yisrachek Gam Hamisuvav Mimenu Shu Ha'arbe Shabba Besiba Sachet. Okay, so basically, I'm not really clear in the depth of what he's saying over here, something very deep, which I cannot pick up. I'm lacking here in fully comprehending what he means to say. And he's just at least focusing, let's keep it simple, he's focusing on what Rashi taught us, and that is that the Tzifoni is a reference for the Yetzer Hara, as we've discussed in detail the last few days. Now let's see over here, actually the Gemara. We should have done this first. The Gemara on page 238, on the bottom, L'kudei Shas U'midrashe HaTanoim, V'yes HaTzifoni Archet Me'alechem, Dorash Rav Avira, V'iteima Rabbi Yeshua Levi, Shiva Shemois Yesh Lo L'Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara has seven famous Maimer Chazal.
Yep.
The Yetzer has seven names. Yoyel, and here three dots from jumping ahead of the Gemara. Yoyel Kiroi Tzifoni. Shinema Vyesa Tzifoni Achim Melechem. One of the seven names of the Yetzer Hara is the Tzifoni, alludes to the Midah of the Yetzer Hara. It's hidden deep, deep down in the person's heart. It's like a virus, a computer virus. You never know, embedded in the code, the millions of lines of code that keep your computer operating system running in tip-top shape, there's a little few lines of malicious code which is secretly doing things to influence you, to cause things to happen that you're not even aware of. It's hidden all the way in the background. Tanu Rabbanan. V'yes ha-tzafoni archik ne'alechem zeh yetzuhara she'tzafun ve'oymed b'liba shel adam. Now here he shows how it's will be banished. V'idachtiv el eretz u'shmama, it will be pushed away to the land of desolation. U'shmama lemakayim she'ein b'nei adam mitzuyim lehiskores bohem, to a place where there are no human beings. As panav el hayam hakadmoni shnasim ina b'mikdash rishon v'achrivay v'horak talmidei chacham shebai. V'seif el yom ha'acharayim shnasim ina b'mikdash shemi v'achrivay v'horak talmidei chacham shebai. This we already said many times. The east and the west is an allusion to the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni. The Bayis Rishon is called the east, and the Bayis Sheni is called the west. The Olah Voshoi V'Sahal Tzachanosai Shemaniach Umayis Olam Umeskora B'Sonim Shel Yisrael. It does not provoke the nations of the world, but instead provokes Klal Yisrael. Ki Higdil, that's what it means. The Olah Voshoi, this is the disgust. This is the disgrace of the Yetzirah. Why are you focusing your attention on the tzaddikim? Focus your attention on the Umay Soilam. So this is considered to be the disgrace. The stench of the Yetzirah will be exposed, that it attempted to influence, to entice, to do averos tzaddikim. Ki higdil asois amar bayi uvetomidicham yuhu miskore yoseh bikulam. The Yetzirah focuses its attention on Talmidei Chachamim, as we said before. Kol ha-godol mechaveroi, Yitzroi godol mimenu. Anyone who has a greater is greater in spirituality. Ze l'uma ze bor Elokim. His Yetzirah is even greater. We all know the Gemara. The Gemara tells that one of the Amoraim who was learning, Nach. He was giving a shir in Nach, and he said, "Tomorrow we will begin the sugya of
Ravashi
wrote the Talmud. We will begin the sugya, thank you, of Menashe, our friend." He called him Menashe, and that's a chiddush. Even why would Ravashi call him our friend? Because Menashe was no tzaddikal. He was the king for 55 years, and about most of those years, he led Klal Yisrael down a path of evil, avodah zarah. Even though at the end of his life he did do teshuva, his teshuva was not sufficient to turn the tide of the harm that he brought upon Klal Yisrael. And Rav Ashi, when he said, "Tomorrow the shir will be continued, to be continued with our friend Menashe." Menashe came to Rav Ashi in a dream, and he said to him, "How dare you call me your friend?" What's so fascinating to me is that Menashe listened to the shir. I guess the shir was streaming live online.
It was a captive audience at that point.
Okay? It's fascinating. It must have been, you know, listening. There's so many shiurim to listen to. A Torah anytime. There's so many shiurim. What?
It's like when the NSA searches for a keyword.
So Menashe was searching for himself. Yeah. He was searching for Menashe, him for his own name. Okay, I guess so. And he was listening to the shir, fascinating. And he said, "How dare you call me your friend? If you, Rav Ashi, you who wrote the Talmud, can you imagine the holiness of Rav Ashi? He wrote the Talmud. If you were living in my generation, and you would hear about Avodah Zarah, you would run so fast to worship the idol, you would lift up your pants."
No, no, the jacket, I think, the coat.
The coat, okay, the coat.
The glima.
The hem of your coat, in order that it should not slow you down one moment, in order that you can reach your destination a few moments earlier, in order to have more pleasure from the Yetzirah. And I worship idols? But not with that hislavos. I didn't go and lift up the hem of my coat to reach the Yetzirah. So therefore, I am much, much greater than you. Don't judge me. You have no idea. Kol ha-godol mechag. Why? Obviously, he lived in different times. Menashe lived in the time when the Beis Hamikdash existed, when the Shechina was resting upon Klal Yisrael, and they were extremely great people. We cannot begin to fathom their level of spirituality, and with that comes a price. There's a price to pay. Kol ha-godol mechaveroi yitzroi godol heimenu. So don't call me your friend. I'm not your friend. I have no connection to you. You don't come near me. You have no clue what it was like to live in my times. You have no clue to appreciate the Kedusha that we lived with. And thus, you have no understanding of the Yetzer Hara we were battling. It's well known from the Gra says, the Holy Gra, who is greater than the Gra? The Groin. The Gra is a person that cannot even be understood how great he was. And he himself said, this is recorded in different Sarim, he said that he could have an appreciation of what it might have been like to be a Tana. And the Gra lived approximately at least about 1,500 years after, maybe a little less, 1,300 years after the Tanoim. After the Tanoim. So about 1,300 years, maybe less, because the Tanoim, how long the Tanoim went on, a little bit longer, whatever it was. Okay, we're dealing with a very, very long time. And the Gra said, even though we have a principle in the Skatnu HaDoiris, the Doiris have gotten lower and lower and lower, I can have an inkling what it must have been like, the Kedusha, the sanctity of what it was like to be a Tana. But to have... Okay, this lock, close the door. What must have been like? Just close the door. Just close, the best thing is to close the door. What would it have been like? But the Gra himself says, what would it have been like to be a simple, simple person, the simplest person, a water carrier in the time of the Nevi'im, when they were prophets, when Yoel was alive, when Hoshea was alive, when Yeshaya was alive, when Yechezkel was alive, to be the simplest person in Klal Yisrael, to appreciate their level of Kiddusha, the Gra said, that is beyond me. It's beyond me to appreciate what it must have been like to live in such a generation. They lived in different times. When you have a Beis HaMikdash, the Shechina is resting in the Kodesh HaKodashim, you have prophets walking the streets who communicate directly with Hashem, who give you instructions. Could you imagine what society was like? It's impossible to comprehend the level of sanctity. Therefore, we cannot, and thus, when you read in the Nevi'im about the avodas, the sins that the people were doing, we can't fathom. We cannot judge them. You cannot fathom, because it's zeh le'umazeh. Just like we do not relate to their level of Kedusha, we cannot possibly relate to their nisyonos, their battles with the Yetzer Hara.
The same question is asked, not on the same level, from last week's parsha. It says, Achenu b'nei Esav, Hayoshevim b'Seir.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? Achenu b'nei Esav.
Oh, yeah, our brethren.
Yeah, it touches upon
okay.
That topic.
But we're brother. I mean, Yaakov and Esav are...
Yeah, but still.
Okay, but we are brothers. Okay, let's really hear. Okay, that concludes the Gemara. Now there's a little morale. Okay, the morale, let's see what we're going to do. Remember, is going to give us the deep insight into the morale.
Is that right?
Yes. V'hidachtiv el eretz tzia. Zeh shemevi olav yetzahara hu kulo ra. Okay, so the morale on page 239. On 239, this, the Kadosh Baruch Hu brings upon a person, the yetzahara hu kulo ra. V'yadua dabar zemina yetzahara shu meruchok u'mesulok min b'nei adam. It is known, this matter, min yetzahara shu meruchok u'mesulok min b'nei adam. The morale says that the yetzahara has absolutely no redeeming qualities. Okay, we're always told today in this world that it's a mix. It's a mixed bag. Okay, it's a mix. I think it's much better. Like, is it much better? Over here in the machine? I think it's much better. It's a mixed bag. Today we live. There's no such thing today as kulura and kulutan. Everything you have to take the good, the mavdil between the oichel and the psoilas. Everything in this world is like that. That's reality. However, the Yetzer Hara, the morale says, is not part of the world that we know. The Yetzer Hara is kuloi ra. There is no redeeming quality for the Yetzer Hara. There's no rehabilitation. There's nothing we can do to make what is evil good. And that is why the Pasuk says the Yetzer Hara has to be banished. The hidachtiv, it must be pushed away to the extremes. Eretz Yisrael's land of holiness, the Yetzer Hara has no mokayim. It has to be pushed out to the very, very ends. Even Goyim, Chazal say, can come bring korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. Ki beisi beis tefilu chol ha'amim. Every nation has a redeeming quality. Hashem will let the Goyim live, seemingly in the times of Mashiach. They will serve a purpose. Everyone in this world has a redeeming quality, with the exception of the Yetzer Hara, Kuloi Ra. I know you'll say, but we have a famous Chazal that says that the Ahavta Eis Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshu v'chol yodecha. And it says v'chol levavcha v'chol levavchem. In the second parasha v'chol yo'im shemoya, it says levavchem b'loshen rabim. And Chazal tell us you have to serve Hashem with the Yetzer Toiv and the Yetzer Hara. Nu, we have to make the best out of a bad situation. Somehow take the Yetzer Hara and use him to use it to elevate, to have a desire to engage in things that the Yetzer tells us to do.
Fighting the Yetzer Hara make you a better person?
Certainly. But
that's the reason.
That's the contrast. It's a very, very difficult. I'm just throwing out
it's
words.
Like the story you said yesterday. You got up early in the morning to go to shul, and then you met the woman. You have to overcome. In other words, continue and go to shul.
What are you saying
here is that Yetzer Hara is an external force. It's not an intrinsic part of man. And therefore, when you battle it and you can banish it or minimize it, because things, just as natural law follows, Hashem's will, so we should ordinarily be following Hashem's will as well. But there's this external force that is acting on us. And here he's speaking for humanity as a whole, but in general, in Kal Yisrael, in particular, it is not part of their makeup. It's not part of their nature at all. And therefore we have, it's unnatural for us to be involved in chet.
Okay. I mean, this goes back to, I believe it's the Ramban, is what's the difference between Adam and Chava before the chet, the Eitz Hadas, and Adam and Chava after the chet, Eitz Hadas? So it's a very common answer. Before the chet, Eitz Hadas, the Yetzer Hara was external. On the outside, you can recognize I'm good, and the Yetzer Hara, it's outside of me, and there's a battle. What the damage Adam and Chava done to themselves by eating from the Yetzer Hara is they internalized the Yetzer Hara. The Yetzer Hara is no longer an external force; it's part of you, and being part of you makes it infinitely more difficult to overcome it. It's like a virus. It's a virus that's in your blood, which you're fighting off. So the Yetzer Hara came and there was a discussion. Should we do Avera? Should we not do an Avera? And he succeeded in convincing the person to do the Avera. After even the Yetzer Hara, the person himself wants to do the Avera. And the person has to fight within himself. These are just words. It's very, very hard to explain the precise difference.
The baby born with the Yetzer Hara?
Well, now, ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra min uraf. Chazal say yes. Chazal say, and that's a consequence of Adam and Chava eating from the Eitz Hadas. If Adam and Chava would not have eaten from the Eitz Hadas, then no, a person would not be born with the Yetzer Hara. My father, Zichron Levech, always used to say by Bar Mitzvah boys, is that the Yetzer, Chazal say, the child, a Bar Mitzvah boy, gets the Yetzer Toiv when he becomes Bar Mitzvah. But the Yetzer Hara is there already 13 years before, ki yetzer lev ha'adam ra min uraf. And therefore the Yetzer Hara has a 13-year head start. And for the rest of a person's life, there's always a gap of 13 years where the Yetzer catch up, exactly. So a person, the number 13, you live with that number your whole life. Because the Yetzer Hara had you in his hands for 13 years. And the first time you get a Yetzer Toiv to battle that Yetzer Hara is when you become Bar Mitzvah. So your whole life, you're 13 years behind. It's a constant struggle. And here, this Maral is opening up our eyes to appreciate that here in Yemos HaMashiach, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to take the Yetzer Hara to a Din Torah and declare the Yetzer Hara guilty, What will Hashem do? He will restore man to the state of Adam and Chava before the Chait, where the Yetzer Hara will be external and no longer part of our being. That's what it says. What Hashem will do, He will take it and He will banish it to the outside, to the furthest extremes, external, before the Yetzer Hara.
Remember that Chazal where it says that in the future, you know, they'll say, this one will say, all it was, and the other one
said,
oh man, how big that
mountain. Was. It was a mountain, right. Yes, so that's it. I think the Maral will, he touches upon a very, something very deep over here. We take this back to Adam Koyd Machet. Now let's go further. That's what Pasuk Chafalef, Al Tiri, do not be afraid. Adama, the earth, Gili Usimachi, rejoice, two expressions, Ki Higdil Hashem Lasais, Hashem is going to do magnificent things. Here, according to the Pshuta Shel Mikra, Hashem is speaking to the earth, although you are barren, the locusts have obliterated you. Don't worry, Hashem will restore your fertility. You will produce produce once again. Hashem is going to do magnificent things. Pasuk Habayis, Al Tiru Bahamoy Sadai. Now Hashem addresses the animals that were starving. Do not be afraid. Ki Doshu Nois Midbar. They will be the dashu is the deshen. There will be the beautiful pasture land of the desert. It will be restored. The pasture land of the desert will once again blossom. Ki eitz nasa firyo. The trees will once again carry fruit. Te'ena v'gefen, figs and vines, nasnu chelam, will give forth power. They will give forth their strength, which is the strength. And what about the people? We're focused on the earth. We focus on the animals and the animals, telling the animals, do not worry, the earth and so the earth and the animals. What about the people, Klal Yisrael? Here is the wind down, and now Hashem says, do not worry either. Uvenei Tzion, the inhabitants of Tzion, Gilu v'simchu b'Hashem Elokeichem, rejoice in Hashem, your God, ki nosan lochem es hamoire l'tztoka, Hashem has given you the Moira. What does Moira? Moira can mean many things. Moira simply means rain. Moira means the early rain. After the Mitzudo Siyoin, Hamor Kein Yikorei Hageshem Hayarid Achar Hazriya, there's Yoira Umalkosh. Yoira is the early rain, Malkosh is the late rain. So Hashem is going to bring down the Yoira Achar Hazriya Ki Marve Umaski Haaretz, the Mitzudo Siyoin says, it brings wetness and moisture, the Hazarad Mechim Yoira Umalkosh, we're saying Kriyashma. Yoira is the word Moira. Okay, litztaka. Now, what does it mean over here, litztaka? So the Mitzugah stuff, it says you have to make believe it says bitztaka. Okay, it's not, cannot be translated literally. It's a style of writing. But make believe instead of the lama, there is a base. Hashem has brought forth rain bitztaka as an expression of charity. We do not deserve this, but yet Hashem is throwing us a bone. As an act of kindness, of tztaka, Hashem will bring down upon the earth rain. Vayore lochem geshem. Hashem, now the pasuk repeats itself. Why? We have to see what the significance of the repetition is. Simply, you'll say it's poetic repetition. Hashem brings down for you geshem, rain. Moire is the early rain. Umal koish, the later rain. Barishon. Barishon means in the first month, seemingly. Okay? Which is, it's
early in the season.
Early in the season, look over here. We should, like, in Chodesh Nisan. Let's say we have the Mitzudos. Mitzudos. The Tzil does not say. We'll have to wait for a moment. Mitzudos David. Bezman harishon koidem atziras hageshamim. Shoye kol echad bezmanoi. Okay, in the beginning, it was, you know, early in the season. You're not going to get worried. If rain does not come down in the beginning of the season, immediately people start getting antsy. They're very worried, what is going to be? There is no rain, and we're going to have trouble, we're going to have to fast, we're going to have to make contingency plans, what's going to be? You're not going to have any agmas nefesh, the rain will begin to descend upon you early in the season, barishon, in the first opportunity, when the rain is meant, where it's beneficial, that's when the rain will descend, and you'll have nothing to worry about. Let's see the farshan. Yes.
Is there any reason for the order? It starts off vegetation, animals, and last is human.
So it's following the pattern of Maaseh Bereishis. In my simulations, first was the earth, Shamayim Varetz, then came the animals, and then came man. Man was the last thing to be created. Why? The Chazal said that a person should enter into the world in a state where everything is mukhan. You come to the banquet, and food is ready to be served. You ever go to a restaurant, and you put in an order, and it takes them 45 minutes to bring out the food? Why does it, and you pay how much? You pay plenty of money for that. 45 minutes for your food? Come on.
It's a trick to think
that it's fresh. It could be. You know, in marketing, it's a very interesting concept, because in marketing, okay, I find this to be very unethical, but this is a technique. I used to work in marketing. And the technique in marketing is you have to keep the customer there. Your pitch to present your product as long as possible without telling him the price. In other words, you have a video. You want to buy a product, and you have a video presenting the product, showing you all of the features, and it has to be done in a way where you engage him, and he gets curious. And then at the very, very end, after 5 minutes of showing him all the features, you tell him $1,000.
It's more easy payments.
If you would have told him in the very beginning, you show him the product, $1,000, he would leave the page so fast, lightning speed, you cannot keep him on that page. But after you have engaged him, you've pulled him in for 5 minutes, you've softened him up. And then when you tell him $1,000, wow, that's a lot of money for this. But you know what? Maybe it's worth it. And
why is that unethical? I really feel the same way you do, but I don't think it's unethical.
Okay, I
for the exact reason that you're saying.
You're playing with his mind. I know you're right. You're playing with his mind. You're playing with a person's mind. You are manipulating a person.
Yeah.
If you would present the information front and center, then let him make a decision. You're removing yourself. Here, you're manipulating him. If you would hypnotize a person, that would clearly be forbidden, right? You take a person and what is it called? These two movies.
Subliminal messages.
Subliminal messages. Is that ethical? That's not ethical. Okay, you know, in the olden days, everyone knows the films, so you have the frames, so in 1 minute, different speeds. So let's say in one minute, they how many frames, Rav Meir, you know this stuff good, how many frames do you see in 1 minute? Rav Meir, how many frames do you see in 1 minute? In the old-fashioned films, 60, that was standard?
No.
More, much more, right?
I think 30.
8 per second, 30.
8 per second?
No,
it's 30. 30 per second?
Yeah.
Per second? No. That's very high quality. Okay, in the motion picture, you go, let's say in the high quality films.
That's why you saw the line.
So TV is 30, what, a second?
Yeah, 30.
A second? Wow. Okay. That means it's rolling very, very fast. High quality. The more frames you show per second, the higher quality is the picture. So what did they do? It's incredible. It's incredible. You blow your mind as to how this works. Just every one of those, let's say over 2 seconds, they have 60 frames. Take out one of those frames and put a picture of Coca-Cola.
Right.
Coca-Cola. And now you show it.
Subliminal.
And now you let it run for two seconds. So in 2 seconds, you're seeing 60 frames. One of those 60 frames happens to be a picture of Coca-Cola. Consciously, you can't see it. Because it goes so fast. 60 frames or even more frames. I don't see it. I don't see Coca-Cola. I just see the movie. I just see the motion. I see people talking and smiling. And then with it. But subconsciously, your mind sees it. How do you know that? And how do you know this really works? Because if there's no subliminal inserts in those frames, and you show them a movie, how many people during the break go buy Coca-Cola? 3%, 4% of the audience buys Coca-Cola. But when you put the subliminal picture of Coca-Cola, during the break, 40 to 50% of the audience runs out into the hall to purchase Coca-Cola.
serious?
Yes, go online and study. Go study this. Look at the statistics.
In the 50s.
So yeah?
I was in a management class. They made with us experiment. We didn't know that. There were like 20 people. That's the famous gorilla in the room. You should not see it. And we were answering questions, this and this and this and this. And then was like a small break. And then was another about how animals behave. And half of the class started talking about gorillas.
They stopped.
No, they started talking.
They started talking about gorillas. Because it says the gorilla on the screen. It's subliminal.
Nobody saw the gorilla.
No one saw it.
This guy who made the experiment with us, he showed us in slow motion. He says, in every frame, which we were like solving the problem of the management, then a gorilla in the background was walking around and nobody saw it.
Because subliminal. So is this ethical?
I don't know.
It's not ethical. It's certainly not ethical. Is it illegal?
You see it.
That's the way the mind works.
Right. Subconsciously, you see it, but even though
it's going so fast, so you don't see. You consciously, you don't really, you don't see it, but your mind does see it.
Unbelievable.
Is this ethical? It is clearly unethical. Is it legal? What is the din de malchus sedina? I don't know. The laws changed. Different states. I think they made it illegal now, right? Is it legal?
No.
It's not legal, it's illegal.
I think even back then...
it was illegal? They did it. Okay, but it's certainly illegal. So if my question is it any different now? Just like you appreciate that this subliminal advertising is unethical, clearly unethical, because you go and you're making a person do things that he doesn't even realize. So is it now talking about marketing? Let's talk about it from a religious perspective.
Make sure that
the koilos of Brockin?
Yeah, it's all Brockin.
Okay, in economy, these are all valid points. You have to be done. But let me just ask you a question. If you go and you go on a website, you want to buy a product, and you click on something, and then they show you a video, and this guy, he talks and talks, darshans, but it's very interesting what he says. And he keeps you there for a long period of time. And he draws you in. And then at the end of wasting your time for five, you waste your time, 5 minutes, not much, a waste of time. But it's so interesting what he says. And then they present you with the information that you're looking for.
Sales pitch.
And it's way over your head. Had you known this, you never would have considered to purchase this product. But now that they kept you there for 5 minutes, it loosened up your mind and you'll think about it. And it can very well be that you will buy it.
You'll think about it.
So is that unethical? So you'll say, well, everything is up front, but they're playing with your mind. They know how the mind works. You don't know. The average person does not know how the mind works unless you've been trained as a professional marketer and they show you all of these ugly tricks, how to manipulate people with different code words, different techniques, and you manipulate people. And if you're not going to do these techniques, there's no way in the world you can make a living because everyone else is doing these techniques. And some of these techniques border on things which are unethical. They're legal because the government feels they can't go, it's not unethical to the degree where it's going to be declared illegal. But there are things which are unethical. And as a religious Orthodox Jew, is it proper to engage in such activity? So where do you draw the line? I don't know. I really don't know. Where do you draw the line? Subliminal marketing is clearly unethical. This technique that I told you, it's done ma'isim b'chol yom, in one way or another. Why should that be different than subliminal marketing? You're telling me, look, Matan Torah, koilei subrokim, Hashem is trying to open up the mind, to frighten us, smoke, Koilo Subrakim. Obviously, there is an important thing. There are things which need to be done in order your fair opportunity. You have the right to make use of all the tools available to you to present something to make a sales pitch. Maybe that's valid. I don't know. That's why it's what.
You have to say
Kaviyachol. Lahazul Elif Alfei Avdolis. It's Torah. But if Hashem is using these techniques, No, there's something to learn from. Hashem is presenting us with the Torah. Leman, Tia, Yerosoi. Okay, but no, but Hashem is it's Hashem is honest. Hashem is the most honest. Hashem is the most ethical. Hashem is giving us the Torah HaKadosha, and Hashem is using techniques. Hashem doesn't need to do this. Hashem is not called Yochel. Hashem give us the Torah pleasantly. No, leman tia yirasai al panechem levilti sechetu.
Okay,
in a chanami, so you have to.
And because, yeah, but
you got to work with. You're right. You're right.
Ordinarily relate to
you're right.
The human condition.
Right.
These are all very valid points.
Special and effects and special techniques.
Yeah.
So from all and heart kagigas is
enough. Heart kagigas, exactly.
So from all other techniques, the point. Your point is from all other techniques, that technique was used.
So is it ethical to go into a group of Jewish kids who are not observant, show them a movie, and subliminally say, "Learn Torah today"? Ethical?
I don't think so, no. I think it's not ethical. Mm-hmm. You're tricking them.
Right.
I think it's not ethical. I personally think it's not ethical. I was once involved with someone, I found this very interesting. And look at this technique. Look at this technique. I was once involved and the project
that's how we got you to come to shit.
The project I thought it was a brilliant idea, and the project, I don't know why, it stopped in the middle. People, we all know, have very big problems, especially with the Yetzirah of looking at things online that are not appropriate. Yeah. It's a very big problem. So someone had a very simple idea many, many years ago. It's not a solution to the problem, is subliminal messages to when you're online. Besides all the filters and this and then that, is that while you have a little program, it's almost nothing to install, and while you're surfing the web, there are subliminal messages is a psukim. Of Yishbi Yerushalayim, Shmir HaSeinayim, different Mamori Chazal, and that would be part, a tool in the battle for people who are weak. Everyone is weak to some degree in dealing with a very serious problem. And they wanted to promote this, and people should install the software in order to use this as part of one of the tools to deal with this issue. I thought it was a great idea. Somehow it never took off. I don't know why. Somehow.
Maybe it's there, we don't know.
What?
Maybe it's there, we don't know.
You know, there was just an article yesterday. I read an article yesterday is that 11 million people have on their computer, you don't even realize this, 11 million in America have on their either computer or their smartphone software that is observing every single thing that they do. 11, they know for a fact they can't. They're calculating. Go online. You go online. Time. Look for the article.
Yeah, we're tracking on
every website that you go to. This piece of software has record, and they have that, and they can easily figure out if
everything
they want.
Everything you're doing on the computer, not everything you're doing in the house.
On the computer, everything that you type on your computer.
Of course. Yeah.
Would you allow someone to install software? They should know everything that you type on your computer. They should know what you typed, and every website you've gone to should be on record. Sefer Lefanov, every single thing that you've done. No one would tolerate this. You would kill the person. None of your business.
For example, if you say you're looking for a bicycle,
yes,
suddenly you'll get 10 different ads for bicycles.
But that's a computer generated. That's what the cook that's going to be. There's no record, though.
They're tracking what you're doing.
There are different levels. There are different levels. Those are cookies. Those are different levels. A different level. This is something much, much more serious. Much more. It's recorded. Those type of things, they track the advertisements. That's not recorded. That's just artificial. That's just a technique. It's an algorithm, and it's 99% of the time it's harmless. It's a technique that different store, different marketing experts, there are different systems which use to market products which they know you're interested in, but there is no record connecting you, the person, with your name and your social security number and your physical address.
It's from the computer.
Right, it's from the computer. And even the computer, but even the computer itself, it's not traceable to a person, to an address, to a location. The ISP, they have a lot of information on you. The ISP, internet service provider, they pretty much know everything that you do anyway, but they're not allowed to give that information over to the police unless they have a warrant. But the police anyway and the FBI anyway They don't even tell them anyway, take that information. But that's government. That's another government. We're talking about private.
Still free.
We're talking about private people. So it's amazing. It's really, truly amazing what's going on, what's out there. But this subliminal technique, it's a very, very powerful thing. Okay, let's go further over here in the Mefarshim. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, in the Mitzudos. And the big question is, how does Halacha deal with this? That's the big question. The Goyim do whatever they want. They're not coming to ask Shilas. They're not asking Shilas. By the Goyim, it's either Osir or Mut. If the government doesn't like it, they make a law, and it's Osir. And then if you get caught, they can fine you, put you in jail. They can do whatever they want. They have to pass a law. They pass a law, legislation, Congress passed the law, city law, state law, whatever it is. And if there's no law, ethics, who cares about ethics? The Goyim really don't care. They make believe. They have all of these organizations. Ethics, it's all baloney. There's no ethics. There's no ethics in marketing. Trust me, I've been there. I've seen it. I've seen quite a bit. There's no ethics in marketing. It's just a matter of dog eat dog. Okay, but when it comes to halacha, you know, if you're a religious Jew and you get up in the morning, you say Kriya Shema, and you wear tefillin, and you have a conscience, and you go into work, and you engage in these techniques, it really bothers you. What am I doing in this profession? This crazy profession where you have to do these crazy things in order to make a few bucks. Look, in marketing, one thing that a firm person can do in marketing, I'll tell you, is in the marketing, you have to put a picture of a woman who's not dressed sneezistic to sell anything in America. If you don't have a picture of a woman who's not dressed sneezistic on an advertisement, you don't stand a fighting chance.
You kidding?
What? I'm telling you the truth. I'll tell you something so funny, you can die laughing from this. I couldn't get... What? It is true.
An ugly woman, and that's why you Trump won.
What? This is the way... I'll tell you something that's so hilarious. Every time I think of this, I can't stop. You're not going to fully appreciate it because you're not going to see the advertisements. I still work part-time for this Dr. Mandel, who does a Tisha B'Av program every year. So years ago, he started doing the program online. And I was involved in the entire process of bringing his program to the online world. And the first thing we need to do is we need to market the program during the Bein HaMetzarim to let the world know that this program will be streaming online on Tisha B'Av. We need to make advertisements, banners. So I can make basic civil banners. You know, I know how to do it. I used to, you know, basic stuff. But I didn't want to do it. I just wasn't interested. It takes a lot of time. And why should I? I mean, I wasn't getting paid anything extra special, and there was money in the budget. So I figured, let me go get, and I used to work in this business, and I have a lot of contacts from Goyim, because all the stuff that I do is dealing with Goyim. So I contacted one of my professional graphic artists in some third world country who I pay peanuts. I pay them mamish. You'd be shocked how much money I pay them, labor, and the quality is just phenomenal. So I said, you know, let me ask them to make some advertisements for the Tisha B'Av program, right? The Tisha B'Av program. Some guy in India. So I gave him all the information. I gave him the logo, and I gave him all the information. And I said, please put together something. And of course, I knew he's a guy. I knew that. I knew that, of course, we're going to go through. Anything.
He gave you a box of tissues.
Anything that we go through, any product, that project that I work with these people, we go through many, many rounds. Right? The first product they give me is like the opening bid of an auction. Okay, very good. Now let's check. Good, you're on the right track. Let's do this. And we'll go through a couple. That's the way we do. That's the way we do when we work in programming and in marketing. So he sends me very quickly the first sample for the advertisement for the Tisha B'Av program, which is going to feature some Rosh Yeshiva, some very choshev Talmidei Chachamim, the Beis HaMikdash, right, the Chum Beis HaMikdash. And the first advertisement he shows me is the picture of the program with a woman who is not dressed sneezistic at all. Come and join us. on Tisha B'Av to hear the words of Rabbi so-and-so. So can you imagine if I would use it? I wouldn't get past first base with this, okay? It's like so hilarious. A Goisha cup. What?
Could have advertised refreshments after the speaker.
Listen, this was much, much worse.
They have pictures of the first printing of the first Talmud. They didn't own printing presses. They had to use Goisha printing presses. And if you notice, there's that artwork over the first block. You have all those pictures.
Yeah.
They showed pictures of the first Gemara printed. Had pictures of women in states of undress, angels, and things like that, all over the Sefer Brachos and Shabbos. The Gemaras were outlined with those pictures.
Because it was done by a Goisha company.
Because that's how they did it.
That's how they did it, right, exactly.
The Gemaras had pictures like that. They did that in the early 1600s. Yeah, you had that.
It was Playboy Press.
That was the original Sistine
Press. Women used to dress very modestly, though.
No, not necessarily. It's not necessarily.
You have the pictures. So, I mean, it's in the book.
It's very disturbing. There are certain professions... You know, it's really, really eats you up. You have a profession where you make honest money, ethical. It's olam haba. A person can be zeicha to do how be a profession where he does chesed, like a doctor, a nurse. Can you imagine what a zechus it is to be a doctor or a nurse? You oisik in chesed the entire day, and every penny you make is good, honest money. You're providing a service, you're entitled to take a fee, you're getting paid, you're doing chesed, you're making honest money. It's incredible. Someone like me, who's a marketer, the techniques are unethical. And what chesed are you doing? You're just trying to make a couple of bucks. Who are you coming to benefit? You're trying to tell people products that are really garbage products. The competition sells, believe me, sells much better products than the products I was marketing. Okay, in a chanami, that's another issue. Everyone has their nisyonos, absolutely.
But isn't salesmanship part deception and misleading?
That's the problem. That's a very big problem. It's a very big problem. So you have an opportunity to make a parnasa, where the parnasa itself is chesed, where you're doing chesed, and the money you earn is honest money, and it's ethical money. This is olam haba. This is unbelievable. This is such a zechus. Not that many people merit to have they can say that about themselves. That they oistik and chesed the entire day, and the money they earn is 100% ethical, honest and ethical. Go to a cemetery. Where should you be mispalo? You know, a lot of you go to a cemetery. There are a million matzevas. Which matzeva is it kedai to stop and be mispalo? A big grois sereva? To go to all the rebbes? Okay, maybe. I'm not chashal saying anything bad. But sometimes you go walk down the cemetery and you look at the matzevas. If you come across a matzeva where it says, Nene miyigias kapov, you can stop there and say mizmar tehillim. Because a person that they wrote on his matzeva, he was Nene miyigias kapov. He earned, he supported himself, and we assume they usually write that about a person. They don't just write that about a person who was he played poker the whole day, and that's how he supported himself. Usually, it's written about a person who had a good, honest, ethical parnasa, a good trade. You know, that person, it's kedai to get a brach from that person, because the older you get, the more you look around, the more you see what goes on. It's very frightening. It's very funny. Making parnasa is a very hard thing, and the nisyonos are very, very great. And the activities people are forced to engage in, they have no choice. They have to make parnasa. They have no choice, and they engage in activities which you know, you begin to question yourself: why did they ever get involved in this job? What do I need this for? What am I doing the whole day? What kind of money am I really earning? What kind of where is this money coming from anyway? And then you take that money that you earn, and you're very successful, and you give $1 million to a yeshiva. And they honor you, and they put your name on the building, and you think, and tell me the yeshiva, they're going to have hatzlacha, they're going to be matzliach. The money that the yeshiva is getting to pay the bills came from an activity that is unethical. It's unethical. It's not the Derech Hashem. You really think that Hashem has nachas from this type of money, and this type of money is going to go and bring success to the yeshiva? You have someone's a movie star, and their film, the reason why people are coming to watch the film is because they speak mamish nivulpeh, and the whole film is a hashkafa, which is apikursis. And the way the people are coming to watch the film because they want to see them in a state of undress, and they become a multimillionaire doing this, and they take that money and they give money to my alma mater. When I was a child, you're right. The money is mutter. The money has been laundered. Okay, when it goes from one rishus to another rishus, al pi halacha, the money is mutter, because You go through many levels. It's mutter. However, although it's mutter, tell me, do you think Hashem has nachas? Is this the Ritzoyin HaBoyrei? You always have to ask yourself the question. You know, we live in a world of halacha. We get so caught up in halacha. Everything's halacha. Okay, this is the halacha, it's mutter. Is this what Hashem really wants? It's very good. The money that's being used to support the institution, after everything is said and done, you follow all the steps of halacha, the money is mutter. Does Hashem have nachas that Yiddish kindelach are being fed, are being taught, the rabbi being paid with money which came from pornography? People, even goyim, they're looking at things that are mamish, not proper, and they're giving money for this, and this money is being somehow channeled many ways to support yeshiva. Is this really the Ritzoyin HaBoyrei? Come on, you can't say it's a Ritzoyin HaBoyrei.
Maybe you're giving this chus to this person.
So the money, okay, yes and no, but there's certain yeshiva, a yeshiva, you teach Torah, you madrich, a new dar, so you want to give them a zuchus. So the money should go to build a park. The money should go to do something, some other, everything has a time and a place.
It was a very famous story, it was my wife's, I think, great-grandfather, Rabbi Schwartz in Baltimore, where they called up a man for an aliyah, and then he said he could give money, and it was on Shabbos, and he put the money down.
On Shabbos?
Yeah, on Shabbos.
On Shabbos.
The whole big tumult.
Are you allowed to take that money?
Yeah.
Allowed to take that money.
Of course, you know, the positive side is that the shul or the yeshiva or the bachur, they need the money.
Yeah, exactly. Who am I to say? You need the money, you got to pay the bills. You're right. We've done it to ourselves. When you create a situation where you become so desperate, and the only way you can be able to survive is by taking this kind of money, so you're at a point where you have no choice. You have to take the money. But l'chatchila, to start up, to put yourself in that situation where this is going to be the way it's going to operate, l'chatchila, it's very unsettling.
But sometimes you're trapped in the situation.
You are. You are, absolutely.
I was stuck. Either way, I was going to have trouble.
You have a new administrator. They inherit the yeshiva. And the yeshiva has a budget of $10 million. Where am I going to get the money, $10 million? If we're starting ground up, grassroots, we're going to start. Okay, so then you have to think about how much money can we really bring in that we're happy with? But if you're put into a situation where this is what it is, so what are you going to do? Of course. So what are you going to do?
You could get a job and you find out that they were doing things illegally before.
It all depends. You can't generalize.
It will keep the operation running. You have to do things illegally.
Ponzi scheme. That's what a Ponzi scheme is. So and the whole
how is compared this one? I heard a story that a big fundraiser, Rosh Hashiva, came from Israel to fundraise here. And somebody put it to a rich man, and they said, this guy doesn't want to give money. Then he went and talked to him. He says, you know, I will give you money to build a yeshiva, but in that yeshiva, nobody should walk in yarmulkes. And
this guy, the girl, the Panavisharov.
Oh, yeah.
A girl school, the Panavisharov.
He brought a girl school, right?
Made a girl school out of it. Listen, you're desperate. It's mutter. But we have to appreciate what is a lichatchila and what is a bidiyavet. We live in a world of bidiyavet. Everything that we do, kimat, has a degree of bidiyavet. But we should at least know it's a bidiyavet. You always have to stand back and ask yourself the question, okay, it's mutter, you make, is this the Ritzoyin HaBoyrei? It'll go the other way around. Like, let's say, is it the Ritzayin HaBari to burn an Israeli flag? Go the other way. I mean, you want to make a statement, okay? Okay, calm down. You have to ask yourself the question. Okay, you're right. Who's to say? You need the money, and if halacha...
You're saying no to the children, or to the kolel, or to this, you know...
You don't have a choice.
You don't have a choice.
You're right. We've put ourselves in a situation where we don't have a choice. But the nafkamina is the next generation. The nafkamina is when you madrich a new generation, this is not the goal. We're in a situation where it's a bidyeva. We have no choice. We're doing things that are really disturbing. But don't be comfortable with this mahal. You have to strive for better. Okay,
you know
we have to stop over here.
You know the story.
With who?
Yeah. You don't know the story.
No.
Barbara Streisand gave a big check.